Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. Teaching about evolution, academic freedom to teach the controversy. Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Robert Crowther at the CSC in Seattle, and joining us today is Discovery Institute Senior Fellow David DeWolf. Dr. DeWolf is a law professor at Gonzaga University and one of the nation's leading experts on the legalities of teaching evolution. Welcome, David.
Thanks. Good to be here.
I'm glad you're here and we're able to come by today, especially since, as some people will be aware, even as we're recording this right now, the Louisiana State House is considering adoption of SB 733, the Science Education Act. And basically, this is an act that is modeled after the Evolution Academic Freedom Bills, after the ones that we put online and recommended, which people can read for themselves at academicfreedompetition.com. These model legislation that we put forward as an idea for legislators to see what an evolution academic freedom bill might look like. And now, here's a bill that we've been recommending and which I believe that you had a hand in developing coming to fruition.
Yeah, certainly some of the early drafting and the idea was kicking around in a lot of different places. Certainly the idea wasn't original to us, but in terms of shaping the bill and making it fit more of the educational context, we certainly wanted to do that.
Right. And I believe the first bill was actually, that I'm aware of, was put forward in 2004 in Alabama. And that was not done under the auspices of Discovery Institute, but we later found out about it and talked with the sponsors there. And I believe that's the bill that we eventually started working on with Seth Cooper, Casey Luskin, yourself, and others here at Discovery.
Sure. It's been a work in progress, although I think the central concept has remained pretty consistent, namely that we wanted to make a clear statement from the legislature that would encourage school districts to teach the controversy rather than feel as though they were obligated to present only one side of the issue.
Right. Now, we've supported the teach the controversy approach to science education policy for a long time. Can you explain and elaborate a little bit for the listeners on exactly what that means to teach the controversy?
Right. And in fact, when I say teaching only one side of the issue as opposed to teaching the controversy, a lot of people think of it in terms of you'll hear some person unfamiliar with the issue to refer to it as creation versus evolution or science versus religion. The two sides that we're talking about would really be the strengths and the weaknesses of the Darwinian theory of evolution, so that there are scientific critiques of Darwinism that students deserve to hear about, and teachers should have the freedom to expose students to in the course of teaching about the theory of evolution.
Right. We've always referred to that as teaching more about evolution, not less, because a lot of times people think we want to water down or get rid of the teaching of evolution, which is really not the case.
Right. There are a lot of straw men that have been put up by the opponents of this approach, and the assumption is that this is some sort of stealth creationism, and it's really a religious agenda that's masquerading as science. But it's really about teaching the science issues and helping students understand what is strong and what is plausible in the Darwinian theory, but also where there are aspects that even the Darwinians themselves recognize are unsolved problems, questions that may require additional research and thought on the part of the students. Now, it is also true, just as a sociological fact, that somewhere around 50% of the American public doesn't accept the Darwinian theory. If you poll people and ask them, what do you think is the explanation for intelligent life on Earth, they will often give very answers that diverge quite significantly from Darwinism. We're not of the belief that every theory deserves to be taught, but to the extent that there is both a cultural context in which people are skeptical of Darwinian theory, both for scientific reasons and for cultural reasons, this should be taught with an open mind and not in the kind of what I used to refer to as compulsory chapel, where right. where the student has to essentially listen to a homily on the merits of Darwinism and has no opportunity to treat it as though it were an open and interesting question.
And treating things as open and interesting questions, critically analyzing, as we've said before. I mean, this is not a radical approach. This is done in a lot of areas of education. So this would seem very much a common sense approach to how to deal with controversial subjects, especially where you have, you know, empirical data that can be examined. You should be examining all of the data, not just parts of it.
Right. Our critics have been quite grumpy about the fact, accusing us of these slick Madison Avenue techniques. I suppose it all should be attributed to our media relations director, that we have such a slick policy position. Because, as you say, this is not something which is out of the mainstream or coming from left field. The idea of using critical thinking skills, of examining the data and the reasons for various theories and looking at the problem from a variety of different evidentiary perspectives, that's in other areas of science welcomed as a way to help students understand the empirical nature of science and the fact that it's with no preconceptions and so forth. But suddenly, when that logic is applied to this question of how you explain complexity and the appearance of design in biological systems, there's sort of a circling of the wagons to say, well, gee, maybe that's fine in other areas, but we don't want it in this area. So we've tried to make the scientific principles applicable in this area as they are in other areas of science.
And you mentioned the mainstream. Far from being out of the mainstream, I mean, this would seem to be, and you argue that it is, protected constitutionally. You co-authored a report, Teaching About Evolution in the Public Schools, A Short Summary of the Law. And I was hoping you could explain a little bit about the constitutionality of this approach and how that fits in with the necessity of academic freedom legislation. I mean, why do we need legislation to protect something that should already be protected?
Well, if you go back to the last case that the United States Supreme Court looked at in this area, interestingly, it was from Louisiana. It was Edwards versus Aguillard. And that was an academic freedom bill, at least that's what they called it. But the Supreme Court found it unconstitutional because the schools were required to teach essentially a biblical form of study. It was called scientific creationism, or creation science as contrasted with evolution science. And that was a thinly veiled form of religious belief. We've emphasized the fact that there's nothing in the proposal to teach the controversy that in any way favors or presents a religious view of the issue. There are simply competing scientific views, and in particular, competing views about Darwinian theory, so that the subject matter here is Darwinian theory, both, again, its strengths and its weaknesses. The only criticism really that's been made of it is that it's a sort of disguised religion, but you'd have to strain pretty hard to try to make this into a religious view. And by contrast, I think, if you insist that only one view of a subject be taught, where in fact there are multiple views, where in fact the community holds a variety of different views about the topic, if the school district tries to impose an orthodoxy and prevents any criticism of that orthodoxy, the school runs a much greater risk of violating the Constitution. But because this has been an area that makes teachers nervous, and school principals and directors of science curriculum, it makes them nervous when someone suggests this teach the controversy approach. They feel as though they're on thin ice we thought it would be helpful to have clarification by the legislature to encourage teachers to follow the evidence where it leads.
A good question then might be, does the Academic Freedom Bill, do these bills require the teaching of strengths and weaknesses?
No. What it does is to give the teacher the freedom to present the issue in a way that allows for open discussion rather than making the teacher feel as though they were hamstrung by a kind of ideological box that they had to stay inside. Again, one of the criticisms that the U.S. Supreme Court made of the Louisiana Act back in the 80s, that was struck down in Edwards versus Aguilar, was that they said the teachers already had the freedom. In fact, I think the court misspoke. I doubt the court would reaffirm what they said in that case, because they said that the teachers had the freedom to replace the existing curriculum with one of their own choosing. And so therefore, by passing this law, the legislature was not sincere in claiming that they were promoting academic freedom. I think it's much clearer today that teachers don't have the ability to simply say, well, gee, I don't like this textbook, I'm going to make up my own textbook, or I'm going to design my own curriculum. The teacher still has to follow the curriculum selected by the school board, but within that context of following the curriculum, allowing the students to express their own views or to express ideas critical of the presentation that might be in the textbook, again, is part of the critical thinking skill that the modern science education is anxious to promote.
Well, with the bill in Louisiana and others going forward, I'm sure that this issue is not going to go away anytime soon. So if
I think you're absolutely right. Let me just add to that by saying that to the extent that most people feel that this issue has been put in an artificial straitjacket and that it's time for there to be a more honest and open discussion of the issues, I think this will turn out to be something that excites a lot of people and has some political traction to it. Obviously, anybody who wants to predict the political future is playing a dangerous game, but I think this is an area that bears watching in the future.
Yeah, I'm sure that we've already heard rumblings about possible academic freedom bills in other states next year. Six states considered it this year. Florida and Louisiana have gotten the farthest along in the process, but some states it's still alive in Michigan and South Carolina at least, so we'll see what happens there as well. And I hope that you can weigh in on that with some insight in future episodes for us.
I'd be delighted to.
Good. I want to thank you for being with us today. And for those of you listening, you can read the report that David co-authored, Teaching About Evolution in the Public Schools, A Short Summary of the Law. We will provide a link to that at ID the Future's homepage at idthefuture.com. And if you want to keep up with the issue on a regular basis and find out what's going on with academic freedom legislation and other issues related to the whole debate over how to teach evolution, be sure and check in daily with Evolution News and Views, which you can find online at evolutionnews.org. I'm Robert Crowther for IDTF at the CSC in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.